Two counts and stumbled when I tried to correct myself. Damn it! The curse slipped out on a bed of frustration. I stopped, rested my forearms on the bar, and placed my head on them as I tried to reorient myself. I couldn't tack on my extra practices to Asher and Vincent's training for obvious reasons, so I'd rehearsed alone since my brother's return. Asher offered the use of his private studio in the evenings anyway, but I was too paranoid to sneak over to his house. I'd been doing so well over the summer. However, without Asher there, I was making more mistakes, losing focus, questioning myself. The noticeable change in the quality of my rehearsals added another layer of anxiety. What if he was the secret ingredient? Could I perform in front of a crowd without him next to me, encouraging me? My stomach cramped. No, as much as I liked Asher, I refused to make my success dependent on another person. I didn't care if I was practicing as an understudy and that I'd probably never get the chance to perform on stage. I was going to nail this bloody dance on my own. I gritted my teeth against the slow creep of exhaustion and forced myself to stand again. I had 10 minutes left in the ballet's final act. I could finish it. My body might hate me for it later, but I would hate myself more if I gave up now. It was easier to soothe physical pains than it was emotional ones, especially if they were self-inflicted. My old therapist and doctor said my determination to push myself to my limits was toxic and unhealthy. They were right, it was, which was why I didn't advocate my choices to others. I wouldn't want anyone else to override their body's warning signs the way I did mine. But that was them, and this was me. I was hardwired for competition, which included competing against myself. I had to win, so I pushed. And it worked. I restarted from where I'd stumbled and made it through to the end without botching the choreography. I held the final position for 2 beats before my legs gave out and I half sank, half collapsed on the floor. Bile rose in my throat. I was either going to throw up, pass out, or both. My muscles trembled as I tried to breathe through a white-hot blaze of pain. It engulfed my body, scalding my arms, shoulders, and legs, and sinking so deep into my bones that every joint ached. A migraine pounded behind my temple, and the room seemed to tilt as I struggled to get my bearings. Tears prickled my eyes. I hadn't had this terrible of a flare-up in a long, long time. I knew it was a likely outcome, given how hard I'd exerted myself over the past few weeks, but I hadn't expected to crumple so suddenly and viciously. My emergency packet of pain pills beckoned from my bag. They were just out of arm's reach. I pulled my legs up to my chest and rested my head on my knees. It helped with the dizziness, but not the pain. Every muscle screamed, but I'd finished the choreography, and I'd nailed it the second time around. Inhale, exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4. By the time I reached 100, my tears had dried. When I reached 200, the needle-sharp pain had dulled into a steady ache. Thank God I didn't have classes for the rest of the afternoon. I didn't want my students to walk in and find me curled up on the floor crying. I'd purposely scheduled my rehearsals for the end of the day, when I was supposed to be working on my lesson plans, but I could do that at home. Eventually, the pain and nausea faded enough for me to raise my head. The world returned in bits and pieces, starting with the intermittent buzz of my phone. I checked and saw I had 2 new messages from Karina, both sent 10 minutes ago. Karina. Lavinia wants to see you. Karina. I think it has to do with the staff showcase. Eyes emoji. A groan swelled in my throat. The last thing I wanted was to talk to the director in my current state, but I didn't have a choice. I took 1 last deep breath and dragged myself to my feet. Pins and needles shot through my leg. I had to pause and wait until they subsided before I shuffled to Lavinia's office. Karina's eyes widened when she saw me. Are you okay? Do I look that bad? I joked, but my voice came out hoarse and weak. No, you just... Here. She fished a wet wipe out of her purse and handed it to me. For your makeup. 1 glance in the mirror hanging on the wall revealed my tear-smudged eyeliner and mascara tracks. Crap. I quickly fixed myself and gave Karina a 1 thanks. No problem. Good luck in there. Her concerned stare followed me until I entered Lavinia's office and shut the door behind me. Per usual, the director cut straight to the chase.
I'm sorry for the last-minute summons, but I figured I should tell you sooner than later.
If she noticed my shaky state from behind her desk, she didn't comment on it.
Yvette is no longer a member of the RAB staff. Therefore, she can no longer play the role of Lorena. You'll have to take over as the lead in the staff showcase.
The announcement was so sudden, so unexpected, that my shock temporarily outpaced my fatigue. She resigned. Yvette and I didn't interact much, but she was a longtime employee of RAB. I couldn't imagine her quitting in the middle of the school year, especially when she'd been cast as the lead in the staff showcase.
Not exactly.
Lavinia's mouth pursed with displeasure.
It has come to my attention that she was responsible for a certain disturbance at our school earlier this summer.
Disturbance? There hadn't been any disturbances at RIB except for
the paparazzi.
My jaw hit the ground. Yvette was the one who tipped the paps off about Asher? Why?
I've been investigating the source of the leak that led to the disturbance, Lavinia continued, deftly alluding to the situation without outright saying what it was. I do not take kindly to trespassers, nor do I condone any actions that jeopardize the safety and privacy of our students and staff. I can't share details, but since you were one of the directly affected parties, I can tell you that Yvette's involvement was substantial enough to warrant her departure.
My head spun, but this time it had nothing to do with overexertion. Do you know why she did it? The director's elegant shrug indicated she didn't particularly care. Punishment had been meted out, and that was what mattered.
Money makes people do strange things.
She examined me, her expression shifting from distaste to inquisitiveness.
Will taking over her role be an issue?
I'd been so caught off guard by the Yvette revelation that I'd glossed over the reason Lavinia called me in here. She wanted me to take over as the lead in Lorena. Me, the lead. Not an understudy waiting in the wings, but the star attraction, the one who everyone would be watching. She couldn't have picked a worse time to tell me if she'd tried. My tongue took on the taste and texture of the Sahara. I opened my mouth, but no words rushed to my rescue. I sat there, pinned like a bug beneath Lavinia's stare while my body quaked from the aftermath of my rehearsal. Performing again in theory was one thing, actually doing it was another. I pushed myself in practice for me. I wanted to prove to myself that I could do it, but I'd always operated within the safe confines of my understudy role. Yvette's departure shattered those confines and exposed me to the terror of putting myself out there again. I remembered how badly I'd screwed up my first and, so far, only rehearsal with the cast. How hard I'd had to push just to get through today's 30-minute practice. It didn't matter that I'd gotten through a majority of my practices without incident. It only took one bad night to screw things up. And since the December staff showcase was a one-time performance, I didn't get a second chance. I needed to be perfect. Panic drenched my palms with cold sweat.
Scarlet?
Lavinia prompted.
Yes, I mean, no, I mean...
I winced when her eyebrows arched.
That won't be a problem.
Good. I'll let the rest of the cast know.
Tamara will reach out with more details.
Lavinia peered at me over her glasses.
I expect cast rehearsals will go smoothly in the future.
Judging by her tone, she knew about my screw-up earlier this summer. I wanted to sink through the floor and die, but I forced a bright smile.
Yes, I won't let you down.
I left her office in a daze. Karina was on a toilet break when I got out, but instead of waiting for her, I returned to my studio and called the only person who could calm the nausea roiling my stomach.
Hi, darling.
Asher's voice flowed over the line.
Miss me already?
My smile wobbled. Actually, yes. How's your first day back? Today was the official start of Black Castle's pre-season training. It was our first Monday apart in months, and I felt his absence like a gaping hole in my chest.
It was good, but Vincent and I have a meeting with Coach in 10. We'll see how that goes.
Hey, you two are finally getting along. He should be happy.
He should.
I heard male laughter and chatter in the background. He must be in the changing room.
But I'm guessing you didn't call me in the middle of work to discuss football.
No, I admitted. I told him about my conversation with Lavinia, but not about my flare-up after practice. I didn't want Asher to freak out or get distracted. I could handle this on my own.
Wow.
He whistled when I finished.
What a way to start the week.
I know. I stared at my pale, disheveled reflection in the studio's mirrors. I was still riding the carousel of dizziness, but Asher's voice kept me grounded enough to get through the conversation without shaking.
How do you feel about being the lead?
A note of caution crept through his words. What don't I feel? Nervous, terrified, nauseous, a little excited? I honestly haven't processed it yet. I leaned my head back against the wall. Ask me again in 72 hours. He laughed.
You got it.
Anyway, I just wanted to call and tell you. If I waited until tonight, I might have combusted, but I don't want to keep you any longer. I dreaded hanging up. But I couldn't use him as a security blanket forever. Good luck with your meeting.
Thanks.
I heard the smile in his voice.
And Scarlett, for what it's worth, I think you'll kill it as Lorena.
My lips tipped up, but they slowly flattened again after I ended our call. Asher, Vincent, Yvette, Emma, the showcase, the pain, the threat of the paparazzi. All the loose threads in my life, big and small, swirled inside me. They tangled together and formed a rope in my chest, pulling tighter and tighter until it nearly cut off my supply of oxygen. Sometimes merely existing took too much energy. So I closed my eyes and tried to breathe. At that moment, it was all I could do.
Chapter 40. Asher. I ended my call with Scarlett and tossed my phone in my gym bag, right as Adil bounded over to me and Noah, whose locker was next to mine.
There they are, my fellow Black Castle baddies.
He clapped one hand on each of our shoulders.
Missed me?
Like a toddler misses a rash, Noah muttered, but he didn't shake off the midfielder's greeting.
So you did miss me.
Adil appeared unfazed by the goalie's lackluster enthusiasm.
New season, boys. We're back and we're going to crush those Holchester bastards and everyone else,
he added as an afterthought. You got that right. I bumped my fist against his in agreement, but my mind lingered on Scarlett. She sounded a little off during our call. Perhaps it was her nerves over the Yvette and showcase situation. She had complicated feelings about performing in public again, and the sudden promotion from understudy to lead couldn't be easy. I made a note to check in with her again once I was home. I changed shirts while Adil regaled us with tales of his summer at home. The locker room crackled with the back-to-school energy of a new season, and laughter and teasing banter filled the air as the players caught up with each other for the first time in months.
I can't wait to see them on the pitch again.
Adil rubbed his hands.
But she better watch his fucking back.
The mention of my old teammate filled my mouth with the taste of copper. It was the taste for competition, for redemption, for vengeance. We almost swept the league championship last season, and this was our chance to vindicate ourselves. Since Vincent and I set aside our differences, there was nothing stopping us from taking the number one title come May. Coach entered the locker room.
Dubois! Donovan! He barked.
He jerked his head toward his office.
Get in here!
A chorus of taunting oohs swelled as Vincent and I stopped what we were doing and walked toward him, our expressions identically wary.
In trouble already? That's a record,
Samson joked. The Nigerian winger laughed when Vincent gave him a light shove on his way past.
Next time you want to make a joke, make sure you can complete a 45-minute run without heaving like you're in labor first,
he called over his shoulder. The first day of preseason was always the toughest, as players transitioned from a summer of food and holiday back to work. Another chorus of oohs mingled with jeers as Samson shook his head.
Low blow, Captain!
He yelled after us.
Low blow!
I smirked, but my amusement quickly faded when we arrived at Coach's office. He shut the door, and once again deja vu permeated my senses as Vincent and I settled into our seats. Coach sank into his chair opposite us and steepled his fingers beneath his chin. The clock ticked. The air conditioner hummed. The muffled noises from the locker room emphasized the tension dripping around us. Vincent and I shifted in our seats. If Coach was employing some sort of psychological warfare tactic to make us uncomfortable as fuck, it was working. After what felt like an eternity of interminable silence, his eagle eyes zeroed in on Vincent.
Dubois, your father all right?
Yes, sir.
I'm glad to hear that. Coach leaned forward. If I ever find out you trumped up a family emergency to get out of something I assigned to you, I'll have you running interval sprints until you develop a bloody intimate relationship with the nearest rubbish bin. Understand?
Vincent swallowed.
Yes, sir.
My snicker died halfway when Coach turned his attention to me.
This is a new season, a fresh start, he said. I'll chalk last season's problems up to growing pains, but your petty antics end here and now. You may not have spent the summer together like I'd planned.
He cast another glare at Vincent, who slid a few inches down in his seat.
But that's not an excuse for picking up where you left off. I expect you to behave like more than adults. I expect you to behave like champions. If that's going to be a problem, you need to tell me right bloody now.
His eyes glinted with warning.
Is it going to be a problem?
No, sir, we chorused. Donovan and I have come to an understanding, Vincent added. So you don't have to worry about us.
Coach's thick brows beetled with skepticism.
Is that so?
Yes,
I picked up on Vincent's thread.
We've learned from last season's mistakes. It won't happen again, Vincent said. We are fully prepared to work together to destroy, to beat Holchester and everyone else, I went on, echoing Adil's earlier addendum. Coach's eyes tapered into suspicious slits.
Good, he finally said. I assume this understanding started with the Sport for Hope charity match.
Our mouths formed identical O's of surprise. He knew about my long-time involvement with the non-profit, but how did he know about Vincent?
I read the local papers and I have spies everywhere.
The curve of Coach's mouth would have resembled a smile if he wasn't allergic to smiling.
I heard about your brawl with Pessoa and the Greens too.
The curve vanished.
He's a wanker. But don't pull any of that shit during one of my matches, or...
Someone knocked on the door, interrupting what I was sure would have been another flinch-inducing threat. Vincent and I exchanged glances. Who would dare interrupt one of Coach's meetings? Coach's brows bent further until they formed a single line across his forehead.
Come in!
He snapped. The door opened, and Greeley, our assistant coach, popped his head in like he was afraid Coach would chew off his limbs if he allowed them past the threshold.
Sir, your daughter's here. She's waiting in the hall.
Tell her I'll be out in a minute.
Greeley left and Coach glared at us again. He did that a lot.
I have other business to attend to, but I trust you won't do anything to jeopardize this beautiful, budding friendship of yours.
We shook our heads in unison, even as my unease rattled in my veins. I was going to take a wild guess and assume dating Vincent's sister fell under Coach's anything clause. Vincent and I didn't breathe until he dismissed us and left to meet his daughter. I guess he didn't care about leaving us alone in his office. Not that we were dumb enough to snoop through his stuff. We valued our lives.
Christ, I felt like I was a student getting called into the headmaster's office again,
Vincent muttered on our way out. We'd given Coach plenty of lead time so we didn't have to walk next to him. The man was inspiring, but also, frankly, terrifying.
You're not the only one, I muttered back.
I'm surprised he didn't put us in detention and make us scrub the floors.
Don't give him any ideas, I snorted.
When we re-entered the main locker room, it was empty. However, a flurry of whispers led us around the corner to the exit, where the rest of the team was huddled around the little window in the door.
What's going on? I asked. Have you ever seen Coach's daughter?
Adil turned, his eyes gleaming.
She's here. So?
Vincent yawned.
What's the big deal? I heard she's joining the team staff, Samson said. I didn't know how, but he always found out about team-related breaking news first. She'll be interning with Jones.
Jones was Blackcastle's lead performance nutritionist.
Big deal. We get new interns all the time. She's not special just because she's Coach's daughter.
Vincent sounded unimpressed.
You all better get back to the locker room before Coach sees you, or he'll make us do horseshoe runs again.
A collective shudder rippled through the group, but that wasn't a big enough threat to make them disperse.
Dude, Samson forgot the most important part.
Adil walked over and placed his hands on Vincent's shoulders with great solemnity.
Coach's daughter is hot.
That got his attention. I shook my head as Vincent pushed his way toward the window, but curiosity got the better of me as well. None of us had ever seen Coach's daughter. I knew she lived with his ex-wife and that she was his only child, but that was about it. I didn't care that she was hot, but I was curious about what Frank Armstrong's daughter looked like. I squeezed next to Vincent and peered out the window. Coach's back faced us, obscuring most of her body. After a minute or so, he shifted, revealing long blonde hair, hazel eyes, and a heart-shaped face. My jaw dropped. Beside me, Vincent went rigid, his breath expelling in a similar rush of shock. Because it turned out we had seen Coach's daughter before. Not only that, we drank and partied with her. We turned to each other, our expressions identical masks of disbelief, while Coach continued to talk to Brooklyn. The first thing I did when I left training was call Scarlett again. She had no idea Brooklyn was Coach's daughter, but she didn't sound particularly upset about it.
I knew she was hiding something,
she said.
It makes sense. She does want to go into nutrition, and if I were Frank Armstrong's daughter, I wouldn't run around telling people either. I barely acknowledged being Vincent's sister.
For good reason, I told her. She laughed, but like our conversation earlier, it sounded a bit forced. However, when I offered to drop by her house or have Earl pick her up for a rendezvous at mine, she declined, saying she was tired from rehearsals and wanted to nap. I didn't push it. She sounded like herself again the next day, so I took her explanation at face value. The grueling demands of the preseason soon dominated my attention, and the novelty of discovering Brooklyn's relation to Coach quickly evaporated as we swept through the friendlies and the real season kicked off several weeks later. We won our matches easily, but we hadn't faced any heavy hitters yet. The real test would be our match against Holchester in 2 weeks. Still, that didn't mean we passed up the opportunity to celebrate beating Wentworth in our first official match of the season. What I really wanted was to celebrate with Scarlett, whom I barely got to see these days. Between my club obligations and her adjusted rehearsal schedule, we spoke on the phone more often than we did in person. I was spoiled after a summer of having her mostly to myself, and I was desperate for alone time with her. Nevertheless, I couldn't say no to the first team outing of the season, which was how I found myself packed into the Angry Boar with the rest of the Blackcastle team.
Captain buys the first round,
Adil announced after we placed our orders at the bar. Beer for those who indulged, water or soda for those who didn't.
It's tradition.
Vincent narrowed his eyes.
Since when? Since now. Interesting,
Vincent said.
You know, I seem to recall you never picked up a single tab last season. Hey, I entertain with my wit and humor. You can't put a price on that,
Adil said defensively.
Speaking of which, I have a team bonding idea, and it's all thanks to Donovan.
Every head swung toward me. I shrugged as confused as they were.
I read the book you recommended.
Adil reached into his pocket and brandished a small paperback featuring a colorful cover of a half-naked redhead and two massive, scaly reptiles.
Triceratops and threesomes. Hey, it was good!
He shouted over an outburst of laughter and jeers.
Bruv, what are you reading? Are those dinosaurs? What kind of kinky shit are you into? Donovan.
Samson crossed his arms, his mouth twitching.
Explain.
I almost told them the truth until I remembered Scarlett was the one who'd introduced me to the title. I hadn't read it, but I did not want to explain why Vincent's sister was the one giving me erotic book recommendations. I saw it in a bookstore, I lied. It looked interesting, so I shared it with Adil and Noah.
Don't look at me, Noah said when everyone swiveled to stare at him. I was an unwilling recipient of the information.
You were in a bookstore? You mean you can read?
Stevens, one of the other forwards, cracked. I crumpled a napkin and tossed it at him. It hit him square in the face.
Bugger off, Stevens. You don't even know how to do your own laundry.
His face fell.
I told you it was the machine's fault. That high-tech shit is bloody confusing. Excuse me, but let's get back to the topic at hand.
Adil raised his voice.
Anyway, as I was saying, I have a team bonding idea. We should create a Black Castle book club where...
More jeers drowned out his voice.
Where we read a different erotic book every month, he shouted. It'll be fun!
A book club? That was my idea. Granted, I'd been joking at the time, but still, let it be known that I thought of it first. However, the rest of the team was not on board.
Fun? You have a strange idea of fun. No bloody way. You don't have to join if you don't want to,
Adil said with great dignity.
But it will be fun, and you'll miss out on some great books. Now, who's in?
He looked around. Silence.
Come on, guys,
he wheedled.
This is way more interesting than partying every weekend.
That's because you don't drink, Stevens said.
Exactly.
Adil's smile wilted as the team remained silent.
Seriously, no one wants to join.
Bloody hell, I was going to regret this later, but...
I'm in.
I was the one who inadvertently got us into the mess. I might as well see it through. His face brightened again, and he shot me a grateful look.
Me too,
Vincent said, surprising the shit out of me.
I'm the captain. Team morale is part of my job. Great!
Adil's smile returned to full wattage.
I always knew you two had a good taste. Who else is interested?
There was another beat of silence. I'll observe. Noah's quiet rumble shocked me even more than Vincent's participation. But I'm not reading about dinosaur threesomes.
Fine!
Adil sounded delighted.
You can be our mascot and bring snacks.
Noah's scowl expressed how not delighted he was with the assignment. However, his participation, combined with my and Vincent's approval, led the rest of the team to join in trickles and then a wave. Soon, almost every person agreed to join the book club, though I could tell some didn't think we were seriously going to read Dino Erotica every month. We grabbed our drinks and crowded around various tables and booths. The atmosphere was the most relaxed I'd felt since I joined Black Castle. Everyone was less on edge now that Vincent and I had called a truce, and our victory that afternoon added an extra lift to our spirits. This was what I'd missed. I loved the sport, but I loved the camaraderie and brotherhood of being part of a team, too. It's nice until you fuck it up, a voice sang inside my head. The revelation about my relationship with Scarlet was a guillotine waiting to fall. At this point, I was deep in denial and taking my interactions with Vincent day by day. Who knows? Maybe we could keep our secret from him until Vincent and I were both retired and I invited him to our wedding. He couldn't kill us at our own wedding, could he? You good? Noah asked while half the team left to argue over what song to play next at the jukebox.
Yeah,
I flashed a quick smile. Just thinking about the Holchester match coming up. He didn't look convinced. The gruff goalie was the quietest, most subdued member of the team, but he was also the most observant. He had to be, considering he was raising an 11-year-old on his own. That couldn't be easy. I'm glad you and Dubois made up, he said. I guess Coach's summer plan worked, even if you only had 2 weeks of training together. The beer turned sour at the back of my tongue. I guess so. I avoided Noah's eyes. I was the one who messed up last season. I don't want that to happen again. The jangle of bells above the door cut our conversation short, and a noticeable hush fell over the pub when several members of Holchester's team walked in. I stiffened, my fingers curling tight around my pint glass. Noah straightened as well while the other Black Castle players glared at the newcomers like they were intruding on our turf, which, in my mind, they were. The angry boar was open to the public,
But London was our city. Yes, I only moved here at the beginning of the year, but I already thought of it as home. Colchester was only here because they had a match against Arsenal earlier that day. Tension brewed into a toxic storm. Even the other patrons were on high alert. Mac and his triplet bouncers looked like they were ready to throw fists at the first sign of trouble. But that didn't stop Bachi, Lyle, and the other Holchester players from approaching me.
"Look who it is." Lyle's smile didn't reach his eyes. "Judas himself."
Once we'd been friends. I'd bailed him out of sticky situations, and he'd thrown a surprise birthday party for me at my favourite club in Holchester. It was wild to think that a standard team transfer could have ruined our relationship so thoroughly. But to him, it wasn't a standard transfer. I'd left mid-season to join their biggest rival without so much as a heads up, and that was on me. But it had been almost a year, and I was tired of their taunts. They needed to get the bloody hell over it.
"I'm starting to think you fancy me, or with a special nickname and all," I drawled without standing. They didn't deserve that acknowledgement. "Did you seek me out at my favourite pub too? I'm flattered."
His face reddened.
"I don't fancy traitors," he snapped. "But it's nice to see you getting so chummy with Blackcastle. You've truly turned, haven't you?"
"They're my team," I snapped back, my pretense of fake congeniality gone. "And they're not the ones who hung effigies of me in front of Holchester pubs." Non-sports fans would never understand it. But there was nothing like a Holchester football fan who felt like they'd been wronged.
"We can't be held accountable for the public's actions," Bachi shrugged. "It's not our fault they hate you so much."
My jaw clenched. I should have been used to it, but after all this time, the sentiment still stung. I could try explaining it to people, but until they lived through it, no one quite understood what it was like to have a city that once adored you turn on you at the drop of a hat. They felt betrayed by me. But I felt betrayed by them too. Their loyalty truly was transactional. It made sense, but it hurt all the same.
"Get the fuck out of here!"
Vincent came up behind Bachi, his face creased with a scowl.
"You want to drink? Drink. But leave my team the hell alone. Are you so petty you can't get over a bloody transfer?"
"Oh, we don't care about the transfer," Bachi said. "It proved we didn't need him because guess which one of our teams is the reigning league champion?"
A nasty grin split his face.
"Not yours."
The tension thickened into a stifling weight. Vincent's face darkened, and even Noah let out a warning rumble beside me.
"Hold on to your glory while you can, because it won't last long."
Vincent bared his teeth in a semblance of a smile.
"I look forward to beating you at our next match."
Bachi smirked.
"You think you can beat us?"
"I don't think, I know."
Vincent spat something in French. Bachi was Italian, but whatever Vincent said was similar enough to his language that he understood it. He snarled out a response, but I stood and stepped in between them before Vincent did something stupid that would get us tossed out of the pub.
"Back off,"
I warned. I itched to slam my fist into Bachi's smug face. But I was trying real bloody hard to play by the rules this season. I wasn't going to mess up my shot at a championship for anyone.
"You know Mac's rules." "How sweet. You're defending your new best mate,"
Lyle sneered.
"Don't come back to Holchester, Donovan. You're not welcome. Even your own father doesn't want you there anymore."
My hands instinctively curled into fists. Anger chased after my strained calm and torched it into ashes. I told Lyle about my relationship with my father when we were friends, and now he was using it to bait me.
Fuck that. "I can come back anytime I want. Artie,"
I said, using his much-hated nickname. Arthur Lyle, or Artie for short.
"Remember that wide-open shot you missed during our match against Chelsea? An amateur goalie could have knocked that ball right back at you. If I hadn't covered your ass, we would have lost that match. Well, how about the way you fumbled the first half of the season opener against Tottenham? There's a reason you weren't tapped to play for the national team, and you should be fucking glad I don't want to go back to Holchester. If I did, you can kiss your playing time goodbye, because guess what? You're not that bloody good."
Lyle was good enough to play in the Premier League, but compared to other forwards at the same level, He was merely okay, and he knew it. It was a sore subject for him, which explained why he reacted so quickly and thoughtlessly. His face flushed scarlet, and he pushed me hard enough that I stumbled back into Vincent.
Fuck you, Donovan!
A snarl ripped up my throat. I almost retaliated, but I held back when I saw the triplets bearing down on us. Mac got to us before they did.
Out!
His grizzled beard trembled with outrage.
All of you!
Shouts of protest erupted from both teams.
Come on, Mac! They started it. We didn't touch them. I don't want to hear it, he growled. You know the rules. No fighting. I don't care how rich or famous you are. You,
he pointed at Lyle.
Show your face in here again, and I'll have the triplets knock your ass out the door. The rest of you, take it outside. I will not have you in here arguing and disturbing the rest of my customers. Argue with me, and I'll ban you for life. Now get out!
We snapped our mouths shut and skulked out the back exit, since we didn't want to attract attention from the hordes of tourists streaming past the front entrance. One of the triplets slammed the door in our faces, leaving us in an alleyway next to the dumpster.
Nice bloody job, Bachi spat. You got us kicked out before we even got a drink. How is this our fault?
Adil's normally good-natured face flashed with anger.
You were the ones who instigated things first!
Fresh arguments exploded between the two sides again. Meanwhile, I focused on Bachi and Lyle, who led the Holchester hate campaign against me.
You can argue all you want now, but we'll see who the real winner is during our match, I said. Reigning champions doesn't mean you'll stay champions.
Yeah? Bachi's dark eyes gleamed with malice.
How about we put some money on it? A race after our match, you and me. We won't be bound by rules like we are on the pitch, and the winner of the match gets a 5-second head start.
The others' arguments petered out. Meanwhile, the wind died, throwing the alley into eerie silence. Summer heat and the suffocating reek of rubbish crawled into my lungs. A race. I hadn't raced since I beat Clive over the summer. Bachi and I used to compete for fun when I lived in Holchester. But that was then. This was now. Any competition we had going forward, whether it was on the pitch or in the streets, wouldn't be for fun. We would go for the jugular.
Why so quiet, Donovan?
Bachi taunted.
I thought you loved racing. Too scared you'll lose to take me up on the offer.
Adrenaline pounded in my ears. I wanted to wipe the smug smirk off his face as much as I wanted to win the championship. But I'd promised Scarlett I was done. I won't race anymore. I promise. My teammates' curious stares drilled into my cheek. I hadn't told them I'd retired from street racing, so I didn't blame them for being confused.
Look at him, Lyle said. He is scared. He'll lose the match and he'll lose the race. There's no shame admitting it, Donovan. You gotta know when to call it quits.
The other Holchester players snickered. Pride reared its ugly head, demanding action. A punch, a kick, an accepted challenge that had shut them up and leave them eating dust in 2 weeks. I wanted to feel the vibrations of the car and hear the triumphant roar of the engine as I sped past the finish line first. Only the memory of Scarlett's tears stopped me.
I can't wake up every day wondering if that's the day your luck runs out and I'll get a call saying you're gone. I can't lose you.
I swallowed the ball of rage in my throat. My pride wasn't worth breaking my promise to her.
I'm not going to jeopardize my career to satisfy your insecurities, I said coldly. We don't need a race to determine who's better. We'll find out on the pitch soon.
My smile could have frozen lava. And Bachi, you've won one race against me ever, and that was because I let you win. I felt bad for you. That won't happen again, so I wouldn't be so quick to challenge others in something you're clearly not adept at. I left him sputtering in the alley with the rest of the Holchester team. My teammates followed me, their voices overlapping as they consoled me and talked amongst themselves. Despite leaving with the last word, my heart continued to race from the confrontation. Blood roared in my ears as I tried to push the image of Bachi's gloating smirk out of my head. I did the right thing by not rising to his bait. Now I just had to make bloody sure I beat him in 2 weeks' time.
Chapter 41. Scarlet. On the bright side, my subsequent cast rehearsals for Lorena went a lot better than my first attempt. I could practically see Tamara unclenching her butt cheeks after every practice, and I didn't hear any more mutters from the rest of the staff. On the not-so-bright side, I ached all the time. They weren't intense, debilitating aches like the day I learned about Yvette, but they weren't easily dismissed either. No matter how many baths I took, massages I got, or Pilates sessions I indulged in, the pain was always there. It was so incessant and all-consuming that on the morning of the Holchester match, 4 days after a particularly grueling rehearsal, I reached for my emergency packet. If I didn't, I wouldn't be able to get through today's match, and I had to be there for Asher. It was Black Castle versus Holchester. I couldn't miss it. However, the thought of sitting in Markovitch Stadium for 2+ hours without help made my body revolt. So I took a pain pill and prayed it would be enough. I was already pushing myself too hard with the extra practices on top of cast rehearsals. I knew that. But the staff showcase wasn't just a staff showcase. It was my redemption to myself. And the pressure to nail the performance was worse than when I danced at the Royal Opera with the actual royal family in attendance. I just needed to hold out for another 2.5 months. After that, I could rest. Scarlet, do you want another drink? Brooklyn's voice brought me out of my thoughts. We have time for another round or two before I have to be at the stadium. Gotta support Dad and all that. I spun around, my heart ricocheting in my chest. What? Another drink? She repeated as she entered the kitchen. I can do a virgin mojito or a virgin daiquiri, up to you. Mojito, please. I forced a smile. I'd kept my escalating fatigue and discomfort a secret from my friends and Asher. I didn't want them to worry when they were already under so much stress. Asher with the new season, Brooklyn with her internship, and Karina with her endless second job search. If only keeping secrets wasn't as exhausting as practice. I still can't believe you're Frank Armstrong's daughter and that you hid it from us. Karina came in behind Brooklyn with an empty glass and a plate of crisps. But you got us VIP seats for the match, so you're forgiven. All hail nepotism. Brooklyn laughed. We were pre-gaming at my flat before the match this afternoon. It was too early to drink, though some would argue it was never too early to drink. So we'd whipped up mocktails and noshed on several meals' worth of snacks. Sorry again for not telling you guys earlier, Brooklyn said, a tinge of guilt coloring her voice. But people get kind of weird when they find out who my father is. They think they can use me to get access to the players or something, even though I've never met half of them before my internship. Brooklyn wrinkled her nose. I guess I should have known that wouldn't be a problem with you guys, given your ties to Asher and Vincent. Don't feel bad. I understand. I tried to ignore the prickles of pain in my leg. I'm the same way about Vincent. I was taken aback when I first learned about Brooklyn's family tie to Black Castle, but I wasn't mad at her for not divulging the information. We hadn't known each other for that long, and I hadn't asked about her background. When I did bring it up, she easily confirmed the truth, so I didn't bear her any ill will. The prickles intensified. I sat down at the kitchen table, trying to pay attention to my friend's conversation while simultaneously trying not to throw up. I felt a little lightheaded. Though that might be from the drinks. Brooklyn said they were mocktails, but I wouldn't put it past her to slip a splash of rum into the glasses. I scrolled through my phone for a distraction and pulled up my last set of messages with Asher. Good luck with the match today. Can't wait to see you kick ass on the pitch. Heart.
Asher. Can't wait to see you, period. Asher. We'll celebrate later tonight. Just the two of us. Wink.
A bubble of anticipation floated past my aches. Asher and I didn't see each other in person as often as we did over the summer, but we exchanged daily texts and calls. It was almost as good as face-to-face interactions. Almost. Despite the exhaustion weighing on my limbs, I was excited to spend some time alone with him tonight. He always recharged me. Maybe I should become a Premier League intern, Karina mused.
but I'm guessing internships don't pay much. Afraid not, Brooklyn said apologetically. But if you need someone to whip up a personalized nutrition plan, I'm your girl. She handed me my alcohol-free mojito and glanced at the clock. Shit, I didn't realize it was so late already. I have to go. Traffic is going to be killer because of the match. Ugh, I have to go too. I have a tutoring session in half an hour. In the absence of a steady side gig, Karina occasionally tutored secondary school students in maths. Scarlett, we'll see you at the match later. Yep. I forced myself to stand and help as we piled the empty glasses and dishes into the sink. The prickles shot up to my hips and down to my toes. You guys go ahead. I'll take care of the dishes later. Brooklyn frowned. Are you sure? I nodded. I loved my friends, but I needed to lie down as soon as possible. My energy was running dangerously low, and it was barely noon. It was a testament to my acting skills that they didn't question me or pick up on the sweat drenching my back. After they left, I collapsed into a chair again. It didn't seem like the pain pill was working. If it was, why did I... Someone knocked on the door. Scarlett? Brooklyn's voice drifted through the cheap wood. I'm so sorry, but I think I left my bag in the kitchen. Can I grab it? A headache crept from the base of my skull up to my temples. I scanned the kitchen until my eyes snagged on the purple tote sitting on the chair across from mine. Coming, I yelled. My voice sounded unnaturally scratchy. I blinked away the spots in my vision and grabbed her bag. I walked out of the kitchen and into the living room, my steps sluggish. My flat had never seemed so endless. I faltered beneath a wave of wooziness, but I shook it off and soldiered on. I just needed to make it to the door and hand Brooklyn her bag. Then I could lie down, close my eyes, and breathe. It was a sound plan in theory, and it almost succeeded. That was until my body decided it had had enough of my plans and mutinied. It seemed to happen in slow motion. The bag slipped from my grasp, my legs buckled, my vision blurred. An eye crashed to the floor, my mind stretching out the fall so long it almost seemed graceful. Somewhere in the distance, I heard renewed pounding on the door and a voice infused with panic. Scarlett, what was that noise? Are you okay? Scarlett! I wanted to reply, but I was so tired, and my mind was too jumbled. The only thing I could do was give in to gravity and... A fresh spear of pain lanced through my head. I'd hit something on my way down. I felt it, the impact reverberating and amplifying and consuming until there was nothing left except agony and exhaustion and finally, blissfully, oblivion.
Chapter 42. Asher. I spent the morning of the Holchester match prepping my go-to matchday meal, a high-carb, high-protein mix of whole grain pasta, grilled chicken, and salad with a hard-boiled egg on the side, and listening to my pre-game playlist. I never worked out the day of a match, but mental preparation was as important as physical conditioning. Over the years, I'd curated my playlist to include only the songs that motivated and calmed me in equal measure. It looped back to the first song as I tossed my lucky boots into my playing kit. I hadn't played in them since the halfway line goal that put me on the map, but I carried them with me to every match. Call me superstitious, but I credited many of the impossible goals I'd made to their help. They were the boots that started it all, and they were going to take me all the way to a World Cup championship. A thrill of anticipation streaked through my blood. It wasn't tournament time yet, but I couldn't wait to wipe the smirks off Bachi's and Lyle's faces when we crushed them today. Our team was stronger and more cohesive than ever, and if we played our cards right, we'd be hoisting the Premier League trophy at the end of the season. Holchester may be the reigning champions, but that would only make the taste of victory that much sweeter. I glanced at my watch. Fuck. I needed to leave soon if I wanted to avoid traffic and get to the stadium in time. I grabbed my playing kit and headed to the entryway. I'd just locked the door behind me when my phone rang. I didn't recognize the number, so I let it roll to voicemail. Bloody telemarketers. How did they get my unlisted number? I made a mental note to ask Sloane to double check if my private contact information was leaked anywhere. Stalkers were real,
and I didn't want random people blowing up my phone with weird calls. I made it to my car when my phone rang again, and again, and again, all from the same number. A slice of worry wedged into my chest. Telemarketers didn't usually call this many times in a row from the same number, did they? It could be an emergency, and someone I knew was calling from a stranger's phone. Was it my mother? Did my father have a heart attack again? I hadn't talked to him in the past 2 months. My mother said he was doing fine during our calls, but anything could happen. I was in a time crunch, but I answered the call anyway. Hello. I tucked the phone between my ear and shoulder as I tossed my duffel into the passenger seat. I climbed into the driver's side, my chest tightening with worry.
Asher, it's Brooklyn.
The strain in her voice had me straightening immediately. The worry compounded, spreading from my chest to my throat.
I tried calling Vincent, but his phone's off and I...
What happened? I demanded. I didn't have time for a detailed breakdown of what she did before she called me. Brooklyn wouldn't reach out this close to match time unless something was terribly wrong. My mind spun gruesome images of Scarlett lying somewhere injured or... Bile climbed up my throat. When Brooklyn didn't answer immediately, I clutched the steering wheel with impatient white knuckles. What's wrong?
It's Scarlett.
Her voice sounded tiny and far off beneath the sudden thunder of my pulse.
She's in the hospital.
The drive from my house to the hospital should have taken 40 minutes. I made it there in 20 flat. I might have followed the traffic rules, or I might have broken them. I had no bloody clue. The entire drive was a blur, propelled by panic and the echo of Brooklyn's words.
She's in the hospital.
She didn't give me details other than Scarlett collapsed at home. Luckily, she'd been with her at the time and called 999. She said Scarlett wasn't in life-threatening danger, but that didn't ease the knots in my chest. I barely breathed until I reached the hospital, but I still had the presence of mind to alert Sloane about the situation. For once, she didn't warn me about staying out of trouble. She simply said she would take care of everything on her end, including calling Coach and the hospital, and that she was on standby for new developments. When I arrived, a waiting staff member ushered me in through a side exit and up to Scarlett's floor. I wasn't family, but apparently she was conscious and gave them permission to let me see her. She's conscious, which means she's okay. She's okay. She's okay. The mantra thudded in rhythm with my pulse. Conscious wasn't dead. It didn't mean she was doing bloody cartwheels, but at least she was alive. After a seeming eternity, the lift doors pinged open. I sprinted into the hall, leaving my escort behind. I didn't need them to tell me which room Scarlett was in. I could see Karina and Brooklyn standing outside, their faces pale with worry. Karina opened her mouth, but I didn't wait to hear what she had to say before I barreled into the hospital room. I didn't care if that was rude. I needed to see Scarlett with my own eyes, or I would fucking combust. The door shut behind me. I came to an abrupt halt, my chest heaving as I stared at her. She lay half propped up in the bed, her body swaddled in a loose white hospital gown that was almost the same shade as her pale, waxen complexion. She was hooked up to several machines, and gauze dressing covered half her forehead. She blinked in visible shock when she saw me.
Asher?
Her voice was barely audible. My lungs twisted, cutting off the free flow of oxygen. Hi, darling. I swallowed as I approached her bedside. Next time you want to get a hold of me, a call would suffice, yeah? Scarlett's smile was a shadow of its usual self. The vice in my chest constricted further. I'd seen her tired. I'd seen her in pain after a flare-up, but I'd never seen her look this fragile and exhausted. She was always so vibrant and full of life, and the evidence of her mortality instilled a bone-deep terror in me.
You know me. I like a little drama.
She coughed.
How did you find out I was here?
Brooklyn called me. She tried calling your brother too, but his phone was off. Did they get through to him? Did he know his sister was in the hospital? Or was Coach holding off on telling him until after the match? He should be at the stadium by now. But if he did know what happened, he'd be here. Vincent's care for Scarlett was one of the things I'd never questioned about him.
He always turns his phone off before a match. Said it's too distracting.
Scarlett murmured. I smoothed her hair back from her forehead, careful not to exert too much pressure lest I aggravate her injury. What happened?
Nothing. I got dizzy and hit my head.
That's not nothing. My hand lingered over the gauze. How much does it hurt? I asked quietly. Not just the injury, but everything. A silence said more than words could. Jagged shards raked through my insides. My heart felt like cracked glass, its pieces held together only by the sound of Scarlet's breaths. I hated this. I hated the asshole whose car rammed into hers. I hated that medical technology wasn't advanced enough to take away her pain. And most of all, I hated how helpless I was. Despite all my money and all my fame, I couldn't do a thing.
It's not too bad.
Her voice grew fainter.
I pushed a little too hard during rehearsals, that's all. I'll be fine after some rest.
My shoulders stiffened. Her feelings toward the showcase ran deeper than the mere act of performance, and I had to tread carefully with what I said next. The showcase is in December, I reminded her gently. You have 2 months of rehearsals left. Based on the stubborn jut of her chin, I knew it was a lost cause before she even responded.
I'll be more careful in the future. I can make it to December.
Frustration swelled. She was already killing herself to prove she could make it through rehearsals like everyone else. I couldn't bear the thought of seeing her go through 2 more months of this. A collapse wasn't the result of 1 bad day. It had to be an accumulation of them. I wasn't sure what hurt more, the fact that she hid it from me, or the fact that I hadn't been there to notice. My schedule was always packed during the season, and we'd been prepared to spend more time apart than over the summer, but damn it, I should have been there. I'll always take care of you. I cupped her cheek, my chest aching. But promise me you'll also take care of yourself. Scarlet's eyes gleamed with emotion, and she responded with the tiniest of nods. I'll leave so you can get some rest. I leaned down and brushed her lips with mine. If I had the choice, I'd stay by her side until she was discharged, but that would only distract her. She needed to sleep. I'll be outside if you need me. I stood and turned to leave.
Wait, I just saw the time.
Scarlet's voice gained a modicum of strength along with panic.
Your match. You have to go. It's starting in—
I'm not going. I'd already instructed Sloane to call Coach and tell him what happened. He would give me absolute hell for it later. But I'd deal with that when the time came.
What?
Her eyes widened.
But it's against Holchester. It's... Asher, you have to go. I'm fine.
She coughed again, her breathing growing labored.
There's no point in you staying here when I'm sleeping.
There is a point. My jaw tightened. When Brooklyn called and told me you were in the hospital, there are no words to describe how I felt. It was like the world had collapsed and buried me beneath its rubble. And even though she told me you were alive and that you weren't in serious danger, I couldn't think, couldn't even fucking breathe until I saw it with my own 2 eyes. I shook my head, my throat taut with emotion. If I left now and went to the match, it wouldn't matter. I'd spend the entire time thinking about you. I'd be a liability more than anything else. Prior to Scarlet, I would have crawled through a sea of broken glass before I missed a match. Football was the most important thing in my life. It always had been, and I thought it always would be. But I'd finally found something, someone that I cared about more. It didn't matter that I'd spent weeks anticipating today's match against Holchester, or that my pride was on the line. It didn't matter that Coach was probably furious with me, and that the fans would be too. Scarlet was more important than all of that. And I couldn't, wouldn't leave her side as long as she was here. A tear slipped down her cheek.
I'm sorry,
she said, her voice small. My heart squeezed for the millionth time that day. Don't be sorry, darling. I rubbed the tear away with my thumb. It's not your fault.
But...
No, I chose to come here and I chose to stay here. Do not feel guilty about me missing the match. That's my problem to deal with. You just focus on resting so we can get you out of here as soon as possible. I'd hate to subject you to hospital food for longer than necessary. Scarlet's laugh came out as a wisp of a sound, but it was enough for me. Our conversation must have spent her energy, because she didn't protest further. Her eyes fluttered closed, and I waited until her breathing settled into a steady rhythm before I stepped into the hall. Brooklyn and Karina were huddled over the former's phone, wearing identical masks of apprehension. They raised their heads when they heard the door open. My temporary relief from seeing Scarlet morphed into fresh concern. "What's going on?" I asked. They exchanged glances.
"I hate to be the bearer of bad news twice in one day, but..."
Brooklyn handed me her phone.
"You should see this."
I took it, and my skin immediately went ice cold. Someone had captured a video of me arriving at the hospital and sprinting toward the entrance. Going through the side was more private than going through the front, but I guess it still wasn't private enough. Whoever took the video had uploaded it to social media 7 minutes ago, and it already had over 50,000 views and hundreds of comments. Once the paps picked up on this, it wouldn't take them long to figure out who I was here to see. After that, it had taken an even shorter leap for them to connect the dots of our relationship. I'd missed a huge match against Holchester for her. There was only one reason why I'd do that.
"I'm sorry,"
Karina said. She must have come to the same conclusions I had.
"Let us know if there's anything we can do."
"No, it's..." I scrubbed a hand over my face. "No, we'll deal with it. It'll be fine. Thank you." "It's not fine." I batted away the voice that told me our secret. The secret Scarlet and I had worked so hard to keep for so long would soon be out of the bag in the most public way possible. One thing at a time. The news hadn't broken yet. Until then, I needed to call Sloane. A quick scan of my messages revealed she'd already seen the video. Then call Coach. Then find the doctor and figure out a way to make Scarlet's recovery more comfortable. I didn't know how long she needed to stay at the hospital, but she bloody sure wasn't staying in that small, sad room for longer than a night. I made my calls in a quiet corner near Scarlet's room. Sloane was, as expected, on top of the impending relationship leak. She wasn't thrilled about the timing or the circumstances, but I think she was just glad I wasn't making headlines for racing anymore. My call to Coach went to voicemail. I wasn't surprised since warm-ups for the match had already started, but I needed to apologize to him in my own words, so I left a short message. He could be livid with me in person later. Finally, I spoke with the doctor, who said Scarlet could be discharged as soon as tomorrow if her condition remained steady. That was a relief, but I was already worrying about next week's rehearsal, and the week after that, and the week after that. Would Lavinia let her remain the lead if she found out about the hospitalization? With a vet gone, she didn't have other options for the Lorena role, but I couldn't see the stern, rule-abiding director letting what happened today slide.